You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council, Incorporated. Her websites, JugglingDynamite.com and VenablePark.com. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jim.
Happy Grey Cup.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Danielle, do higher interest rates self-correct?
Well, this is the theory we're living with right now, testing that thesis. As you know, since the election, which was only a week ago, Jim, a lot of moving parts have been happening in financial markets. One of the things that's happened is the Trump reflation trade, which is this belief that incoming President Trump's policies will be inflationary in the sense that he plans to, for example, he's threatened to have mass deportation of workers, which could theoretically reduce the supply of labor, which could theoretically provide wage pressure in the U.S. economy. He's threatened tariffs, which would arguably increase the price of goods. And so that, in addition to his propensity to spend a lot on debt and some of the forecasts that showed him adding trillions to the national deficits and debt over the next couple of years, have all sort of spooked the bond market. So even as you had central banks in the cutting mode the last several months, and the U.S. Fed went with 75 beeps so far, it had the 50 basis point cut and then another 25, even that has resulted in a backup in the Treasury market in terms of prices have sold off, and that means the yields on those bonds has increased, which ultimately impacts the cost of capital for real businesses and households that are borrowing in the real economy. So we've seen this in the form of U.S. 30-year mortgage rates has spiked above 7% again in the last week. We've seen this in the form of a collapse in applications, right? Because people are looking at the cost of trying to refinance or to borrow to move homes and facing a much, much higher interest rate than they did, a couple of years ago and certainly even in a couple of months ago, the way that the Treasury market has sold off here. So historically, I've pointed out before that this is actually normal for once the central banks start cutting for the Treasury market to initially sell off, which increases yields. And the reason there is always the same. It's concern that inflation is going to revive, right? That when you think about the full cycle, you come into the peak of a financial cycle with inflation typically ramping up, concerns about that getting out of control or continuing indefinitely. And then when we start to see it come off, the central banks finally start to cut in response to rising unemployment. And then you get this resurgence and concern that, oh, they may reignite inflation. So it's very typical to see this all at the beginning. It's been magnified, though, with the timing of the U.S. election and the incoming, as I say, policies that have been threatened by the new administration. So all of that has really increased the volatility in the Treasury market and, as I said, spiked the cost of capital in terms of what we all look to borrow at. You know, only some of the largest traded financial companies can raise money through debt offerings in financial markets, and they're getting to borrow at really, really low rates, historically very tiny spreads relative to government bonds. And so the financial conditions have loosened a lot for the largest publicly traded companies, but they've tightened, as I say, for the bulk of the economy. So here's where the self-correcting part comes in. Typically, when you get this kind of tightening, you also then see, as I said, the decline in applications for new credit, and you also see stress magnified throughout an over-levered economy. So we have a lot of debt in the system, right? So not just governments are having to pay more now when they look to borrow, but also households and businesses. And that has this natural down push on their ability to borrow, their ability to consume, spend, and invest. And so by having that increase in the cost of capital, it naturally normally depresses economic activity, and then that ultimately makes the bond market return to rally mode, right? Because people look and say, oh, the economy's weakening, unemployment's rising, we're not seeing the appetite for credit, and indeed we're seeing a big spike in things like insolvencies. You know, the latest data for Canada just came in, and the third quarter nationally, we saw personal insolvency filings up 13%, up 20% in Ontario. Business insolvencies were up 16% nationwide, up 40% in Ontario. You know, 50% of households say they're living paycheck to paycheck. So these are all pretty rough stats, especially, as I say, because this backup in treasury yields means people are facing higher mortgage rates, right, which is the opposite of what everyone was holding their breath for in the last year. As it was expected that central banks would begin cutting interest rates, everyone was thinking a sigh of relief, like, oh, great, that means that all these mortgages coming up for renewal in 25 and 26 can expect, hopefully, to see lower interest rates. Well, that's not working out, right? So the pandemic mortgages, era mortgages that were taken out 4 and 5 years ago, Jim, were taken out at interest rates near, you know, 5,000 year lows, but at essentially less than 2%, many of them. And now with this backup in yields, they're facing, you know, rates well above 4.5 again. And so this is an enormous pickup in the cost of carry. And in the U.S., you're also seeing in the third quarter, there was an 11% increase in delinquency rates on credit card debt. So that's people 90 days or more behind on their payments, which was the highest since 2013. So we've definitely got some inflationary concerns, as I mentioned, but the offsetting to that is all the deflationary impacts that are happening right now as well. So here again, back to policy, right? So looking at the Trump policy, we've had this really strong U.S. dollar trade that's accelerated in the last week. And that the DXY, the DXY index, which is a basket of all the major trading partners, is now at the highest since November 2022. Relative to the Canadian dollar, Jim, as you probably have noticed, the loonie is the weakest that it's been since the pandemic, since the first quarter of 2020, trading at above 140 US dollar trading at above 140 Canadian. So if we look back, the loonie bottomed actually at about 130 in the great financial crisis in January of 2009. The loonie bottoming at 130 was the weakest it got. And before that, the weakest it got was in 2003. Well, we're actually worse than that now, right? So this is a concern in terms of the cost of imports for Canadians, obviously. It's better for our exports, theoretically, right? We should, you know, the Canadian economy is having a rough go here because we were over-levered to housing, and housing's out of favor in this environment. It's hard to add new credit. It's hard to push prices up further when people can't afford the current cost of housing. And then you've got commodity prices coming off sharply as well. So this is the flip side of this strong U.S. dollar, right? As well as, again, the Trump policies promising to drill, baby, drill and pump lots of oil. Well, again, the price of oil has come off sharply as we look at a weak economy in China, Germany, France. Many major developed economies are really struggling here. And the one spot of strength has been the U.S. economy, which has been, as we've said, supported by record deficit spending the past couple of years. Now, the other theoretically depressing force here is all of the, you know, government cuts that the Trump administration is threatening that they're going to make, you know, with putting Elon Musk in charge of the Department of Government efficiencies, et cetera. So if they are seriously going to cut, you know, if you listen to them, up to 20%, we'll see, that's going to be a tall order. But of government spending, well, government spending has been the lion's share of most economies in the past couple of years. And indeed, in the U.S. economy, it's been driving 30% of gross domestic product, roughly, is coming from government, which has been much higher than usual. And they've also been a major employer in that economy the past couple of years. So if you're going to see a lot of cuts on government spending, you should see that reflected in less GDP, and rising unemployment. And again, these things tend to be deflationary. So all to say, falling commodities, you know, the higher U.S. dollar, I think ultimately is going to suppress interest rates because the central banks will be back to cutting. Right now, there's all this question about how much the U.S. Fed is going to cut in this environment, and there's a lot of volatility, and it absolutely, you know, uncertainty is looming large. But if you look at all these cross currents, it's, to me, this, the probability still looks like you're going to see the U.S. Fed resuming cuts, potentially in December they could go, but I'm saying, you know, typically they would cut 200 to 300 basis points over the course of a full cutting cycle. I think we get into the early parts of 2025, we're going to see weakness that will make them want to continue those cuts. And ultimately, the Treasury market that has sold off in the last little while will go into rally mode. And ultimately, that will bring interest rates down for borrowers looking to refinance. And in Canada, that will be huge because about half of the mortgages are coming up for renewal in the next year or so. So it really will make a big difference to see how this continues.
Do you think, I've seen headlines from newspapers predicting there will be mortgage wars with banks bidding against each other to get your mortgage business. Will that help bring down mortgage rates with so many people applying for renewal?
Well, I mean, they want to grow their credit, but they're having trouble finding borrowers that can qualify or have the appetite to take on debt. So, I mean, theoretically, you should see competition. But in reality, Jim, in Canada, we have the big six lenders. There is not a lot of actual competition between these entities, some of the private lenders. But, you know, some of the private lenders got over their skis, extended during the last few years where they were making giving away money too much at really low rates. And so they're facing a lot of, pressure from defaults, and it's hard for them to lend out when they're actively writing off of bad debts. So I don't know how much we're going to see in terms of competitive pressures pushing down on mortgage rates in Canada. I think that's a tall order considering how much monopoly the lenders actually have.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. Danielle, the U.S. stock markets all went higher after the U.S. election. They hit record highs once again. Is that a good time to get into the stock market? Is it a risky investment?
Well, Jim, it's at the most expensive levels that we've only seen basically two other times in history. One was the fall of 2021, which we know that, you know, right after that, prices imploded for the next year or so and took back to a multi-year lows at the last October. And prior to that was the peak of the tech wreck in 2000 when prices plunged and then took many years to recover. The only other real comparable to that would be sort of 1929 before that, which was a really bad aftermath and years to recover. So historically, the precedents here are not good. We have a lot, as I said, of retail enthusiasm, buying in late to this expansionary cycle that's already been going on for a number of years here. The yield on the things like the S&P 500 is just barely above 1% today. That's the lowest since, again, the peak in 21 and 2001 before that. So historically, what happens here is that you get multiple compression again, because much of the increase that's happened has been on this faith, blind faith, belief that, you know, that Trump is going to deliver on some kind of miraculous business cycle when actually profits have been muted and negative. The bulk of the small cap companies have the highest negative earnings component that we've seen in decades. So it is definitely not a broad-based benefit here. As I said, there's a handful of large multinationals that have seen their financial conditions soften greatly as their prices of assets have gone up here. But the bulk of the economy still is facing these difficult conditions and potentially less sales, right? So again, back to the policies of tariffs, you know, it's a very complex equation as to who benefits and who does not in this. But there's no evidence. If we look at what happened after Trump's last election landslide came in, you know, it was a big surprise to everyone that he won. But ultimately, inflation ended up lower at the end of his term than at the beginning of his term. Debt ended up considerably higher. The GDP growth scenario that was in his first four years was not much different than the four-year term before that Obama had. So I think that there's been a lot of expectation and hope, multiple expansion, as I said, which means not buying because there's higher earnings forecasts or likelihood, but simply paying more for the same cash flows. And ultimately, that's the opposite of what a good investment looks like. So I think that this is the most financial risk that we've had in capital markets in, like I said, only a handful of times, other points in history. None of those times worked out well. Maybe this time is different, but I don't think that it's likely to.
Paul Fisher from Fisher Investments says, legally, the U.S. president can only impose tariffs for national security and emergency reasons. He believes that if there are new tariffs on products from Canada and other countries, they'll be challenged in court by the Democrats. Do you see that happening?
Oh, I'm sure there'll be all sorts of legal challenges. The extent to which rules can be unilaterally changed by executive order or by the majority of the House of Representatives of the Congress, because the Republicans have that, but there's a limited amount of political capital that they can spend on any particular issue. So no one sort of gets carte blanche all the things they want. I think the tariff thing is much more a talking point, a bargaining chip. I think that's how the Trump administration sees it. And, you know, if you look again at the last time he came in with this tariff agenda that he was advancing, ultimately, you know, China, as an example, ended up eating most of that, because at the end of the day, who has to sell to the U.S. is going to have to sell to the U.S., right? So this goes back to, you know, Canada's vulnerable here because we do depend on basically selling rocks and trees in order to get capital to pay for other things in our country. Our economy has not been properly diversified yet, so we do have a vulnerability there, especially, as I say, if the U.S. is considering increasing its output of oil and gas, that could be problematic for us. But countries like China are in such a difficult position right now because they haven't got the ability for the domestic economy to pick up consumption for households. They're basically not well enough off in general to drive their own economy. So they're forced to keep dumping and selling goods to open markets, and the U.S. being its largest receptor of its goods. So ultimately, I think that it's more going to be a problem for other countries primarily. And as I say, it's likely to depress demand overall in the global economy, to weaken GDP growth. And I think, again, that's going to be a problem since we have such a higher cost to carry. So when you get less revenue flowing around, you know, and right now with the differential in the higher interest rates in the U.S. and the strong greenback, you've got a lot of capital being attracted into U.S.-based assets. That means it's coming out of everywhere else in the world. And that just means less capital and liquidity available for those economies which are currently struggling. So it doesn't surprise me that you see things like the confidence index in the German economy at the lowest it's ever been. I mean, they're having a rough go too, because they're dependent on exports primarily of machinery and automobiles, and, you know, China's been eating their lunch. So the global economy is in the midst of a major shift. And I think that, you know, the good news in this is that real rates, which is, you know, the interest rates available less the inflation rate. The inflation rate has come down significantly, and the interest rates available on safe deposits has gone up significantly. So now we have the highest real rates we've had since 2007, which means for savers, there's incentive there to keep dry powder, to keep things in the safest deposits, and to keep out of harm's way while all this craziness proceeds, while all the speculative fervor is wild, and to just sort of keep your eye on, you know, what historically has always happened, and suggesting that there should be a great opportunity on the other side of this in terms of buying back some of the riskier stuff once the prices have come off a lot.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Danielle Park. Her website's jugglingdynamite.com and venablepark.com. If you have any questions for Danielle or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.